Assessment. Jordan looked into Aditi's eyes. Are you truly all right?
Yes, she said, running a hand along her bare arm. Not even bruised.
When that window burst, you didn't even scream, he marveled.
There was no time. Before I could draw in a breath, you were on top of me, protecting me.
He shrugged. It seemed like the right thing to do. Her face grew somber.
They wanted to kill us. To kill me.
They knew where we were, Jordan murmured. In that enormous hotel, they knew exactly which window was ours, and they were able to rig cables from the roof where the helipad is to get to our window.
What are you saying, Jordan?
Leading her to the cushioned bench that served as a sofa, he said, they had excellent intelligence. They knew where we were and how to get to us. The helipad workers must have seen them setting up the cables.
They must have thought they were window washers or maintenance people.
In black jumpsuits. Frowning, Aditi repeated,
What are you saying, Jordan?
He didn't answer. Instead, he sat on the less than comfortable bench and pulled Aditi down beside him.
Well, she demanded.
Jordan could feel himself frowning. He didn't like the scenario playing out in his mind. Trying to make his expression more relaxed, he replied, Would we have agreed to be shut away in this military base if we hadn't been attacked?
No, of course not.
I'm just wondering.
Wondering?
What if the attack was all a fake, a stunt to frighten us into allowing Halleck and her people to hide us away, out of the public sight? Her eyes widening, Aditi asked,
Why would she do that?
He shook his head. Perhaps I'm just a touch paranoid. Aditi got to her feet and headed for the kitchen.
I think you're just hungry. We haven't had anything to eat since breakfast, and that was hours ago.
As she started rummaging through the cupboard and refrigerator, Jordan went to the tiny counter that separated the kitchen from the sitting room and perched on one of the stools there. Halleck has kept us away from the news media almost entirely, he said. We haven't talked to a reporter or commentator since the day we landed on Earth.
That's not entirely true, Aditi said as she pulled a pair of prepackaged meals from the freezer. We've conducted several interviews.
Not live, not in person. The questions were handed to us by a World Council public relations official, and we responded to them remotely.
Still,
she peeled off the covers and the meals instantly heated. Jordan continued, Then we go to the World Council meeting, and it's quite clear they have no intention of dealing with the death wave.
It's too far in the future for them to consider it a real threat.
Or to build the starships we need to help other worlds in danger. Aditi placed the steaming packages on the bar and then started searching the kitchen drawers for silverware.
That was wrong of them, she agreed.
And what can we do about it? He asked. She picked a pair of forks and knives from a drawer and came around the counter to sit on the stool beside him.
Try to convince them that it's our moral obligation to help those worlds that are in danger, she said.
Yes, but part of the convincing would be to go to the news media and tell the public the full story. As she cautiously tasted a forkful of the prepackaged food, Aditi said,
But you didn't want to do that. You said that would make me an object of intense media attention.
He grinned ruefully, that's putting it mildly. Yet Halleck must have realized that would be our next move, and she staged this assassination attempt to get us to come quietly to this comfortable little prison so she could keep us out of the public's eye. Aditi stared at him.
You think so?
Yes, I do. Aditi chewed thoughtfully for several silent moments. At last she put her fork down and said,
Jordan, I agree with you. I think you are right.
You agree?
Yes. I agree that you are a little paranoid.
Jordan's shoulders slumped, but he muttered, Even paranoids have enemies. Shortly after their impromptu lunch, a young somber-looking Spanish soldier knocked at their door with a stoic robot holding their travel bags from the hotel. With Señor Castiglione's compliments, the soldier said in almost accentless English. Muchísimas gracias, said Jordan. The young man's face broke into a warm smile. De nada, he said. He stayed at the door as the robot trundled into the bedroom, and, at Aditi's direction, left the bags on the king-sized bed.
Then both the soldier and the robot left their quarters. Once they finished unpacking, Jordan looked through the bedroom window and suggested, "Let's take a walk. It seems to be a pleasant afternoon outside." The same soldier was sitting on the steps of the barracks front door when they got downstairs. He said nothing to them, but Jordan saw that he got to his feet and followed them at a distance of a few meters. They strolled down a paved sidewalk, then hesitated at the corner of an intersecting street. Jordan turned to the young soldier. In Spanish, he asked if he could show them around the base. The youngster smilingly agreed and led them up and down the well-ordered gridwork of streets and out to the edge of the airfield. Pointing, he showed Jordan and Aditi where the mess hall was, then said in English, "Since you are guests here, it has been decided that you may take your meals in the officers' club." "That's very gracious," said Jordan. "Señor Castiglione insisted on it," the soldier replied. "I am told that he wants you to be completely comfortable here."
"How very thoughtful of him," Jordan said with a cold smile.